Light.
Camera.
Philosophy.
It's the 2024 Dionysus Awards.
For the most thought-provoking movies of the past year.
And the nominees are...
For the most disturbing exploration of a female criminal who thinks she may be innocent...
George is very sensitive. He always was very, very sensitive.
What's your relationship like with him and your other kids?
How is that relevant?
For best film about social justice that wonders what makes a good film about social justice.
Jeez, you would think a construction site at lunchtime would be the perfect place for a little woman power. But this one was so... male.
For the most moving film...
or TV show...
about difficult choices.
Let me take her.
Please. We don't have time for this.
Oh, you don't have time?
Who is she?
To you, she's cargo.
We don't smuggle people. Sorry.
I can do it.
Join us as we celebrate the most philosophically compelling movies of the past year.
The 2024 Dionysus Awards.
Coming up on Philosophy Talk. Can a musical about a doll be feminist?
What kinds of crime can never be forgiven?
Is destiny a real thing?
Welcome to Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm Josh Landy.
And I'm Jeremy Sable, sitting in for Ray Briggs. We're coming to you from the studios of KALW San Francisco Bay Area.
Continuing conversations that begin at Philosopher's Corner on the Stanford campus, where I direct the Philosophy and Literature Initiative, and Jeremy teaches in the Structured Liberal Education program.
I'm joining Josh once again for our annual celebration of some of our favorite, most philosophically compelling movies of the past year. It's the Dionysus Awards.
Jeremy, 2023 was kind of a mixed year for film, but there was some really great stuff in there, like Killers of the Flower Moon, Zone of Interest, Poor Things.
I loved all of those. But today we'll be giving awards to some other movies, including a pair of films vying for Most Disturbing Exploration of a Female Criminal Who Thinks She May Be Innocent.
We'll also consider nominees in the category of Most Moving Film
or TV Show
about Difficult Choices.
And in the category Best Film About Social Justice that wonders what makes a good film about social justice, we'll be thinking about American Fiction and Barbie.
We'll also take nominations from listeners like you, who've written to us about other thought-provoking, Dionysus-worthy films.
Now, back in the summer, there was this fun pretend rivalry between Barbie and Oppenheimer, another excellent movie.
So we sent our roving philosophical reporter, Holly J. McDeed, to find out more about our so-called Summer of Barbenheimer. She files this report.
He's a physicist with a naughty twist, Oppenheimer.
If you had to sum up popular culture in 2023 with one word, Barbenheimer might be it.
The sky is on it, his bombs are atomic.
We are doing bombs, brunch, and Barbie next week. So we're doing a double feature with Oppenheimer and Barbie.
Moviegoers flocked to see Barbie, a film about the doll, and Oppenheimer, a film about the creator of the atomic bomb, on the same day.
You know when you watch a scary movie, you needed like an upper afterwards to like make you feel less terrified? Kind of what we're gonna do.
The first one has got to be Oppenheimer, just because I could get the depressing stuff out of the way first. Oh, that was a downer. Okay, let's go have fun at Barbie.
It was this representation of dark and light, masculine, feminine, the movie snob versus the casual moviegoer.
Steve Grinelli is a professor at Northeastern University, where he studies popular culture and messaging.
It was a coming together of disparate audiences, all together on the same day.
The release day for both films became like an event in an era with few timed events. The Super Bowl is a rare example.
Mahomes swings it. It's there! Hardman! Jackpot, Kansas City!
Fans couldn't wait for either film to come out on Netflix to be part of the phenomenon. The other reason Barbie resonated with people is because so many were curious about how such a popular doll with so much history and baggage would be portrayed.
Oh, is this going to be a subversion of a traditional Barbie narrative?
Moviegoers showed up to Barbie Mania dressed in pink.
I feel so beautiful.
So do I.
This is the best day ever.
It is the best day ever, and so is yesterday, and so is tomorrow, and so is the day after tomorrow, and even Wednesdays, and every day from now until forever.
No!
You guys ever think about dying?
Is this going to address, like, you know, the impact that it's had on the presentation of feminism? Like, how is this going to be done? Do we trust Greta Gerwig enough that we're just going to walk into a theater and say, show me what happened?
I feel that I have blood on my hands.
And when it comes to Oppenheimer, people also were already familiar with the storyline. How bombs were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan and led to the deaths of 200,000 people in an effort to end World War II. Audiences just needed to meet Robert Oppenheimer, considered the father of the atomic bomb.
Dr. Oppenheimer, it's an honor.
Mr. President.
Please.
Thank you.
Steve Grinnelli says a cultural movie event like Barbenheimer would be difficult to manufacture again. Movie producers could plan for two very different films premiering on the same day and see if people come out to see both. But no one wants to feel like they're part of a marketing ploy.
When audiences perceive the manipulation, when they're like, they think we're going to go see this, so they're putting out this on this date. Like anybody who's kind of, if you're knowledgeable about that, then I can see that people may perceive that as condescending.
I'm not seeing Barbie.
You're not going to pay to see Barbie. Why not?
Doesn't look good.
You never had the Barbie Dreamhouse?
Nah, dog.
Barbie and Oppenheimer became a temporary boon for theaters across the country that are still struggling post-pandemic. And if the unlikely combo of plastic dolls and atomic bombs can help cinema survive...
You understand that humans only have one ending. Ideas live forever. Humans not so much.
Maybe that's what it takes. But keep in mind, movie executives, we want the power to control the next cultural phenomenon.
I want to do the imagining. I don't want to be the idea.
For Philosophy Talk, I'm Holly J. McDeed.
Thanks for that blockbuster report, Holly. I'm Josh Landy. With me is my guest co-host, Jeremy Sable. And today it's our annual Dionysus Awards for the most philosophically compelling movies of the past year.
But let's get right to our first award. We've got two contenders in the category Best Film About Social Justice that wonders what makes a good film about social justice, American Fiction and Barbie.
You know, Jeremy, I absolutely loved Barbie. I loved it. It's not just a powerful exploration of gender relations. It's also a hoot. Those extravagant sets, the fabulous performances, the hilarious musical numbers. There's even a reference to a Proust Barbie.
Yeah, that's the one that didn't sell, right? Was it the plastic Madeleines?
I don't know. But I love it so much. And there's a brilliant joke involving a politically aware teenager calling Barbie a fascist.
She thinks I'm a fascist? I don't control the railways or the flow of commerce?
I thought that was great, too. But I'm not sure about your claim that this movie is a powerful exploration of gender relations.
What do you mean? You've got a vision of a world ruled by women. You've got a nefarious Ken who wants to introduce the patriarchy into Barbie land. You've got a barnstorming speech by America Ferrera illustrating the contradictions of gendered expectations.
You're supposed to stay pretty for men, but not so pretty that you tempt them too much or that you threaten other women, because you're supposed to be a part of the sisterhood, but always stand out and always be grateful.
Well, sure, Josh. But what's the name of the movie again?
Barbie?
Right. Last time I checked, Barbie was a product sold by Mattel. This movie was the brainchild of Mattel. I mean, it's a feature-length advertisement, just like Steve Grinnelli was saying earlier. And what is Mattel up to? Convincing girls that they need to grow up into impossibly tall and skinny women. And by the way, Margot Robbie isn't going to disabuse them of that.
But the movie's way ahead of you, Jeremy. Look, first of all, there are zillions of Barbies in this movie. Different body types, different races, different professions. There's even a transgender Barbie. Plus, it makes a joke about Margot Robbie being the star.
What? You're so pretty.
I'm not stereotypical Barbie pretty.
Note to the filmmakers, Margot Robbie is the wrong person to cast if you want to make this point.
This movie totally knows what it's doing.
Okay, but so what? I mean, self-awareness can't save something sucky from being sucky. This movie presents itself as a feminist manifesto, and it totally fails.
What do you mean?
Well, okay, this is a bit of a spoiler, but think about what happens halfway through. Barbie Land gets taken over by the patriarchy, and guess what? The Barbies love it. Patriarchy is fun. That's not feminism.
Anyone need a brewski beer?
What are you doing? You're a doctor.
I like being a helpful decoration.
And Alan likes to help me give all the Kens foot massages.
No, I don't. I don't like that.
We love it.
I see that bit totally differently, Jeremy. Look, for me, that's a brilliant exploration of what some philosophers have called false consciousness. You know, when you think you want something, but that desire has really been foisted on you by your culture.
You're probably thinking of one of my favorite philosophers, Simone de Beauvoir. She says the patriarchy can make itself seem very attractive. Women can cite all kinds of reasons for buying into it. That's what makes it so dangerous.
Exactly.
Okay, but even if you're right that the middle part of Barbie is about false consciousness, and that's a big if, there's still the small matter of the ending.
All right. What about it?
Okay, plot spoiler. The Barbies fight back. And what are their weapons? Their so-called feminine wiles?
Or distract them with the old standby, wearing glasses so that they can discover that you're pretty.
Yeah.
Sure, go ahead.
All this does is reinforce bad gender stereotypes. And it's hardly a recipe for revolution. You're not going to change the world by smiling cutely.
Might I remind you, Jeremy, that we're talking about a movie?
Sure, but you're the one that said it was feminist.
Well, it's a feminist movie, but it's not a feminist manifesto. Look, it could have done all the things you seem to be asking for, but then it wouldn't have got all those viewers in the door. It's broken all kinds of records. Don't you want people to see movies that make them think about gender?
Well, sure, but I also wish broccoli tasted more like M&M's. The thing is, if it did, it would be M&M's. The very fact that Barbie appealed to so many people is kind of a bad sign.
I don't agree. Barbie isn't an art movie that failed. It's a bit of fluffy, big-budget mass entertainment that miraculously went beyond its remit.
That does remind me of one thing, that fantastic note of sarcasm early in the film, where the narrator says,
"Thanks to Barbie, all problems of feminism and equal rights have been solved."
She isn't just making fun of Barbie dolls. She's also warning critics not to expect too much of this one movie, as though a piece of mass entertainment's going to fix the world's problems.
After all, they're living in Barbie land. Who am I to burst their bubble?
Thinking about burdening art with the problems of the world, let's talk about American fiction.
Sure. American fiction is all about the expectations that society places on African-American writers. The protagonist, Monk, just wants to tell timeless, universal stories. But that's not what the world wants.
Right. In this movie, white readers desperately want black fictions to be testimony. In fact, they want it all to tell a single story, a story of suffering, poverty, and desperate choices.
I think now will come some sort of, you know, dumb, melodramatic sob story where you highlight your broken interiority, something like, I don't know.
I hate this man. I hate my mama, and I hate myself.
You can see why a well-intentioned white reader might want that. Lots of great art shares diverse perspectives on life and helps us to understand why things are the way they are. And when it comes to race relations in today's America, there's an awful lot that needs explaining.
But still, demanding that all African-American novels be a form of sociology and represent only one kind of life, in the movie, this is a way of relegating them to second-class status.
Wait a minute. Why are these books here?
I'm not sure. I would imagine that this author, Ellison, is black.
That's me. Ellison.
Yeah.
He is me, and he and I are black.
Oh, bingo.
No bingo, Ned. These books have nothing to do with African-American studies. They're just literature. The blackest thing about this one is the ink.
These novels never get to lay claim to universality or to the many functions of fiction available to white authors. They only ever get to do one thing.
I remember Toni Morrison raising a similar concern in one of her prefaces. She said white readers trap African-American writers in a box, judging every work by political criteria. Quote, "If the novel was good, it was because it was faithful to a certain kind of politics. If it was bad, it was because it was faithless to them. The judgment was based on whether black people are or are not like this."
Right. American fiction is raising the same questions about what readers should want, what society should venerate, what we should be expecting from our artists.
Plus, this movie is hilarious, and it's beautifully subtle. The protagonist, Monk, has some real serious flaws. I wouldn't want to date him. And the movie raises questions, but it doesn't answer them for us.
I don't want him to make some grandiose speech spoon-feeding everyone the moral of the story. There is no moral. That's the idea. I like the ambiguity.
And the other great thing about American fiction is its subplot. I don't know, give too much away here, but the subplot's all about Monk's everyday life. A parent with dementia, a sibling with health problems, another sibling who's living the high life, the fear of becoming your father. This is exactly the kind of story that Monk wants to tell.
You gave her opioids to sleep?
Yeah. You ever seen a heroin addict? Those guys take naps standing up.
It's dangerous.
Look, I'm keeping an eye on her. I'm a doctor.
So am I.
Right. Maybe if we need to revive a sentence.
This movie is about a guy who can't get to tell his timeless stories about universal human issues. But the movie itself does exactly that. In the movie, African-American writers can't achieve success that way. But in real life, this film, written by African-American writers, is up for multiple awards, and deservedly so.
So thinking of awards, Jeremy, we've got Barbie and we've got American Fiction. Which should win the Dionysus?
I loved both of them, but there's no question in my mind. American Fiction isn't just better than Barbie. I think it was the film of the year.
So, the 2024 Dionysus Award for Best Film About Social Justice That Wonders What Makes a Good Film About Social Justice goes to...
American Fiction.
I'd be standing outside in the night.
Deadbeat dads, rappers, crack.
You said you wanted black stuff.
That's black, right?
I see what you're doing.
Want to hear more? You can find the complete episode on iTunes Music, or for unlimited listening, become a subscriber at philosophytalk.org.